It is Thursday, November 30th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, U.S. media report the Trump administration wants to replace Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. China issues a warning about North Korea. And researchers are searching for more ways to treat opioid addiction. It's all ahead. Reports that Secretary of State Rex Tillerson may soon be leaving his job. I spoke with VOA State Department correspondent Cindy Sain about this developing story.
We do not have any sort of confirmation or any reaction yet from the State Department. There is going to be a briefing later Thursday, and I am guessing that all the reporters will be asking, is Secretary of State Tillerson still in his job, and how long will he still be in his job?
Yeah, there have been reports over the last few months, really, that he has not been that happy in his job and that he's had some conflicts with President Trump.
Yes, that's right. And the New York Times is reporting that the White House Chief of Staff, John Kelly, has been promoting the plan to more or less, I suppose, force Tillerson to resign or trigger him to resign and to replace him with the CIA chief Pompeo, who is thought to be much closer to Trump. And as you probably know, Sarah, Secretary of State Tillerson and President Trump have had differences on the Iran nuclear deal, on the crisis with Qatar, with Tillerson going on a major diplomatic shuttle to the region and then being undercut as he was flying back from the president. And the president seeming to be much closer to Saudi Arabia and taking Saudi Arabia's side, if you will, in that dispute. And also, right just at the moment, is on the nuclear threat from North Korea. We had Secretary Tillerson coming out just a little while ago with the German foreign minister, who is here, and saying, yes, we do want China to restrict its oil exports to North Korea, but not cut them off completely, which is a little bit different than what the president had said.
Any indication as who would replace Mr. Pompeo at CIA?
Well, the word there is that it would be Republican Senator Tom Cotton, who has been a leading figure pushing for a more hawkish position on Iran in particular. He was a staunch opponent to the Iran nuclear deal. So I think he would take a much harder line on issues such as Iran.
That's VOA State Department correspondent Cindy Sain. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what's trending?
Well, yesterday, President Trump making headlines on Twitter when he retweeted a series of videos from a group called Britain First. It's a far-right anti-Muslim group in the United Kingdom. Those videos drew sharp rebuke from across the internet, including from British Prime Minister Theresa May, who has been one of Trump's big allies. May said that Trump's retweets were wrong, and she condemned that group. Now, that prompted President Trump to tweet at Theresa May, "Don't focus on me, focus on the destructive radical Islamic terrorism that's taking place within the United Kingdom. We are doing just fine." But there was a slight problem with that tweet. Trump actually tweeted at the handle at Theresa May, which is not the prime minister's account. Instead, it belongs to a woman who has just 7 followers and a private account. So Trump seems to have noticed this mistake because about 15 minutes later, that tweet was deleted and the proper @Theresa_May, which is the prime minister's account, was in the tweet, but not before people noticed and began making jokes about that. Of course, Trump has done this before with singer Lee Greenwood. He tagged the wrong Lee Greenwood when he was wishing him a happy birthday, but this might be the first time he's done it with a world leader.
All right. Thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. Venezuela arrests 2 top former oil officials. Fighting between the Taliban and Islamic State expands to new territory in Afghanistan. In Pakistan, talks are underway with what they call the U.S. away from the public glare to bridge differences on the Afghan war. And as we just heard, Britain's Prime Minister Theresa May said President Trump was wrong to retweet anti-Muslim videos. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new study from researchers at the University of Southern California suggests reading stories, regardless of differences in language or cultural background, could make us more empathetic to others. The researchers mapped a number of brain responses in people who normally speak English, Farsi, or Mandarin with a functional MRI. After studying the MRI images, the researchers say they found similar patterns of brain activation when people found meaning in stories. Researchers say their study suggests narrative storytelling could have a profound effect on how people develop better self-awareness and empathy for others. The study lead author, Morteza Degani, says despite differences in language and culture, there is something universal about what occurs in the brain when we are processing narratives. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we look at efforts to combat the opioid addiction crisis here in the U.S. In an editorial in the state-run China Daily Thursday, China warned that tensions over North Korea's nuclear and missile testing is getting out of hand. It suggested the U.S. relisting of North Korea as a state sponsor of terrorism only served to accentuate the belief that President Donald Trump's interest in diplomacy is simply for show and may have prompted Wednesday's latest missile test. It called on the stakeholders to put an end to Pyongyang's dangerous game by engaging in dialogue leading to a peace treaty. At the UN Security Council, Undersecretary General for Political Affairs Jeffrey Feltman took part in a meeting on North Korea's test of an apparently new intercontinental ballistic missile.
This is the DPRK's third test of a ballistic missile of apparent intercontinental range in less than 6 months, and its 20th ballistic missile launch this year. The DPRK, again, did not issue any airspace or maritime safety notifications. Mr. President, this is the 13th time the Council has met to discuss the DPRK in 2017. The DPRK's repeated nuclear and missile tests over the past 2 years have created great tension on the Korean Peninsula and beyond. This dynamic must be reversed. The solution can only be political. Given the grave risks associated with any military confrontation, in exercise of its primary responsibilities, the Security Council needs to do all it can to prevent an escalation. Unity in the Security Council is critical. Security Council unity also creates an opportunity for sustained diplomatic engagement, an opportunity that must be seized in these dangerous times to seek off-ramps and work to create conditions for negotiations.
Well, meanwhile, U.S.-UN Ambassador Nikki Haley said if war comes, it will be because of the continued acts of aggression, like the latest missile test. She also appealed to China to cut its oil supply to North Korea, a position rejected by Russia. The U.S. also said it's contemplating further sanctions, including interdicting goods heading to or coming from North Korea by boat. Robert Manning, a senior fellow in international security at the Atlantic Council, tells International Edition's Victor Beatty it's too early to determine how effective this new rocket is for delivering a nuclear warhead on target.
So we don't know if their guidance system works. We don't know if their reentry vehicle can survive. We don't know if it can survive a horizontal flight of 8,000 or 9,000 miles. So it's not clear this is the breakthrough that some people are arguing exists. I think we're still a couple of years away.
North Korea claims that it's attained nuclear status. What does that mean?
Well, I don't know what they mean by that, because as far as I understand it, they probably had de facto nuclear status for some time in terms of having a device that could get a bang out of. So I think that they're slightly exaggerating their capabilities in terms of being able to hit the U.S. mainland.
Russia has picked up the mantra of China, calling for a dual freeze, a freeze on the North Korean program, and a freeze on joint U.S.-South Korean exercises. Would Washington and Seoul consider that?
I'm uncomfortable with that, the moral equality of it. In other words, North Korea is violating U.N. sanctions when they're testing weapons or missiles, and military exercises are the fundamental ingredient of an alliance. If we don't know how to fight with our allies, then we don't really have an alliance.
However, Robert Manning said the U.S. has made a serious mistake in accelerating the timeline for exercises and stepping up shows of force like flyovers, rather than laying back and trying to create a diplomatic opening. Ken Gause, director of the International Affairs Group of the Center for Naval Analyses, said the leadership of North Korea has two key objectives that would be undermined if it was trying to develop an offensive nuclear capability.
One objective is regime survival, and the second objective is perpetuation of the Kim family rule, both of which would be undermined if North Korea took aggressive action with a newfound nuclear strike capability, because if they were ever to use that offensively or even in a coercive manner, the regime could come to an end very swiftly. So I only see the program as being a deterrent and defensive capability in order to ensure regime survival. That said, there is the possibility that North Korea could use the nuclear deterrent, once it has a nuclear deterrent, to try to engage in a more coercive escalatory policy to try to extort economic aid or concessions or security guarantees from the United States and South Korea. But just as Pakistan found in the late 1990s, such a capability probably is not going to yield results. And so North Korea is going to be left with just a purely defensive system.
The U.S. has urged China for a total embargo of oil to North Korea.
China can't turn off the oil to North Korea. The pipes that flow into North Korea and bring oil to North Korea also bring oil to other parts of China. And the type of oil that flows through those pipes, as we found back in 2003, when you turn those pipes off, which they did in, I think, 2003 for some maintenance, it pretty much destroyed the pipe mechanism. So China can dial it back probably more than they have so far, but they can't completely turn off the oil to North Korea.
Ken Gause says it is past time to engage in dialogue. He said there are enough sanctions in place, and now is the time to see if the North's nuclear and missile programs can be frozen in place. Well, this year's global entrepreneurship ended Thursday in Hyderabad, India. One of the featured speakers, it was President Donald Trump's daughter, Ivanka, who spoke about women and entrepreneurship. Prime Minister Narendra Modi joined Trump, who's an informal advisor to her father, in opening the conference, whose theme this year was Women First, Prosperity for All. The gathering, co-hosted by the U.S. and India, came as the two countries appeared to be working to strengthen ties. VOA's Michelle Quinn reports on technology, and she attended the conference in India. She describes to me the reception Ivanka Trump received.
I would say that Ivanka Trump was warmly embraced and welcomed by Indian nationals, and this crowd was very excited that she was here. All the way to where she was speaking, the convention center, there were giant posters with her face on it with a saying maybe that she had. So there seemed to be kind of a following of her and kind of what she represented, both as, you know, an advisor to President Trump and his daughter, but also as a, you know, an entrepreneur.
And what did she speak about?
She talked about many things, but she talked about women and entrepreneurship and the accomplishments that people have, that women particularly have made, both in the United States and in India. So she talked about kind of where things are and, you know, the positives, but she also talked about kind of where things have to go and some of the things are ways that there are gaps between men and women in both countries. But then she also talked about the friendship and the relationship between the two countries and said multiple times that this conference and this jointly produced conference was just another step in sealing the friendship and the partnership between the two countries. And my understanding is that, you know, this is part of what this is about, was kind of there's a close relationship between India and the United States, but there's also areas of disagreement. and that this was just part of kind of working towards bringing the two countries closer.
Well, now, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, he did not attend this conference. And I guess there have been some reports of maybe some concerns he has over the high-profile role that Ivanka seems to be playing in the Trump administration in regards to foreign affairs.
Yes, that is true. And I saw some of those reports going into this that he was not attending and that there was some tension potentially between them. And I don't know anything about that except that there's a lot of people from the State Department here and they seem to be pretty excited. They worked on this, for months. And I don't know if her role, if she's doing anything, really about kind of, down in the weeds about what role India would help would be for us as a strategic partner in the region. She didn't speak to that specifically. She kept it at a high level, talking about friendship. And one thing that's sort of interesting, too, is that both speakers, both Prime Minister Modi and Ivanka Trump, talked about their own country as being kind of the best, the most important, and where manufacturing and where jobs should be created. So they both had, like, America first or India first. And they were asked multiple times, isn't there a conflict here? How can you be so focused on your own country's success, but also be at a co-host a global event? And they sort of shrugged it off and said, there's no conflict here at all. But of course, when you bring up specific policy issues, then that's where some of the conflict comes up.
And I also read in reports that apparently the city, Hyderabad, was cleaned up, swept up quite a bit before Ivanka's arrival. I don't know if so much to do with her or maybe just the summit in general.
Yeah, it's sort of funny. But I think that the city has been going through some kind of renewal, rejuvenation. They just opened their first metro line this week. So a lot of things are changing here. But it is true, like a long kind of a drive into where the event happened, there was this beautiful green fabric sort of blocking the view of very low-income housing, construction sites. It just looked like this sort of, and some of that started to kind of fray at the edges today. Some of it's falling down, and you're like, oh, behind that beautiful green fabric is a whole community living, like a sort of a shanty town community. So I kind of understand, now I know sort of what's behind it. But they worked really hard to present what they perceived as being a positive face for Hyderabad.
That's VOA's Michelle Quinn. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition. The United States is suffering through an unprecedented wave of opioid and prescription drug abuse. Every day, an average of 91 Americans die from an opioid-related overdose. A new study comparing two of the top medications for treating addiction found they were equally safe and effective in curtailing opioid use, relapse, treatment dropout, and overdose. Faith Lapidus reports.
With an estimated 2.5 million Americans addicted to prescription opioids and heroin, medical intervention is increasingly important in responding to the epidemic. The most commonly prescribed treatment is buprenorphine naloxone, often administered to treat a narcotic overdose in an emergency situation. However, it has opioid-like effects and the potential for abuse. In contrast, the drug naltrexone, marketed as Vivitrol, blocks the effects of opioids, but patients must be completely off opiates to start taking it. Joshua Lee at New York University's School of Medicine says the two drugs are used in very different ways.
Naltrexone is a opiate blocker, and so it's used after people have gotten off opiates, so-called after detox, and then want to maintain in a opiate-free state, using naltrexone to help them. And then buprenorphine is used in more of a maintenance model where people switch without fully detoxing from a unhealthy opioid, say heroin, to buprenorphine, which can be taken on a daily basis and then maintained for months and months in terms of long-term recovery.
Lee and his colleagues led a study to compare the two therapies. A group of 570 opioid-dependent adults who were still trying to kick their heroin habit in detox were given either a daily oral dose of buprenorphine while in treatment or 6 monthly injections of naltrexone after completing treatment. Their results show that both therapies worked with about the same effectiveness.
Over the course then of 6 months, about the same amount of people that had started did okay in terms of avoiding opiate relapse and kind of surviving on treatment, doing reasonably well in terms of traditional outpatient opiate treatment goals.
One caveat, a full 25% of the people scheduled to take naltrexone were not able to complete detox, so weren't able to get the shots, while only 6% of the other study group were unable to start their daily dose of buprenorphine. The researchers hope their finding that the medications are equally safe and effective encourages clinics to expand their treatment offerings and save lives. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Thanks very much, Faith, and that is our show for today. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In their most recent reports on human rights conditions in Iran, both the U.S. State Department and U.N. Special Rapporteur Asma Jahangir pointed to the continuing pattern of arbitrary arrest and detention of dual citizens and foreign nationals by the Iranian government. Earlier this month, Iranian state television highlighted this dubious and cruel practice by broadcasting videos of detained American graduate student Shiwei Wang, who was in Iran conducting research for his dissertation on Iran's Qajar dynasty, and British-Iranian dual national Nazanin Zaghari Ratcliffe, who had been visiting family with her baby daughter. Both Wang and Zaghari Ratcliffe were charged with spying and given long prison sentences. In a press conference following the presentation of her latest human rights report on Iran, Special Rapporteur Jahangir noted that the easy charges of espionage leveled at dual citizens and others by the Iranian government are a little far-fetched. The great problem, she says, is that the defendants were not given a fair trial.
They did not get due process in courts. And the manner in which it was done was not justice but revenge.
In a statement published in July, the White House condemned nations that continue to take hostages and detain our citizens without just cause or due process. It is time the Iranian government stops doing what the White House noted it has been doing for nearly 40 years. Iran has used detentions and hostage-taking as a tool of state policy. President Donald Trump, the White House warned, is prepared to impose new and serious consequences on Iran unless all unjustly imprisoned American citizens are released and returned.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.